July 10, 2021. It's the Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show, happy Saturday. Started off with John Coltrane, Miles Davis doing Milestones. I think around the 5 minute mark there, 5:07, Miles blows the clam. Don't tell anybody. You probably, you know, knowing him in the Brooks Brothers suit, you know, half of it's not letting people know it was, right? That was supposed to be there. And then we had Swarm of Flies with Writhe. I'm going to try to get this right, Brother Ken. Ken Wolrob.
You got it.
Okay. Forgive me for destroying your name. It's a beautiful name and stuff. And glad to have you on again, truly. What have you done between last time you were on the show and now?
What haven't I done between the last time I was on the show and now? I've been making more music, that's for sure, including that song. And I've been, you're a bike rider, right? I've been riding my bike a lot. That's what I've been doing.
Oh, man. Yeah, since my knee went bad, I had to kind of give it up. So I do 2 days elliptical trainer and then a hobble by the waterfront. So that's my exercise now. It's about
you're still at it.
5.5 hours a week. Yeah, I mean, getting the kayak out of the boat, it was nothing once I got the water, but it was just too dangerous to get out of the boat to the water. And then the leg for when you stop, you know, kick out, that's the hurt. Mm-hmm. So, man, down goes Fraser. It's too scary. So, but you're right. You got to keep going. What's also helped me was cutting out fucking sugar and salt. Music. God, you know, we had this cat on, Ron Anderson, a couple of weeks ago. And he's living in Brooklyn there. And he told me the new fucking avant-garde scene is metal.
He's not wrong. I mean, in terms of people pushing into different boundaries and doing things, there's folks doing a lot of interesting, cool stuff in heavy music.
Right, because, you know, you think of that parking lot. Was it a Judas Priest gig or something? These guys are...
Yeah. That was probably horrific for you. Like,
no, a lot of mullets. I actually saw the first Judas Priest gig at the Whiskey. I mean, when they first came over. And Rob Halford, it was, believe it or not, man. And Gary Valentine, you know, the Blondie's first bass player opened up with the new Wave Trio. It was the most bizarre thing. But Rob Halford's voice was just fucking incredible.
I can't imagine being being young and hearing that voice for the first time at, like, a concert if you had never heard the band before and then hearing him.
Well, I had heard... The record was, and they played on KNAC here, Sad Wings of Destiny.
Oh, my God, that's real early. Yeah.
Is that early? I think there
Second
was one.
Album?
Okay, because there was one in England before that they didn't put. Maybe it came out later with the Razor Blade or something. Coca-Cola, Rock and Roll or something.
Yeah, Rock and Roll was the first one.
Okay.
The Razor Blade one you're thinking of is British Steel, which came out in like 80.
I don't know them by then.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know this song called The Ripper.
Yeah.
Great tune.
Oh, and that scream on that? He's peeling paint off the walls with that scream. I mean, yeah, he talks to bats.
Now, they had a dually thing going with the guitars.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminded me of Black Oak Arkansas a little bit. Which
yeah,
was good.
Yeah.
I liked, you know, that kind of dually thing, more than the Night Ranger way of doing it. You know?
And they were groovier back then, too. They had a little more swing to their sound back then before they got full-on metal. Like, right. when they got to British Steel, then the sound became more rigid.
Well, you know the swing thing? Bill Ward.
Mm-hmm.
Those first records... With Black.
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Again, Geezer, too. You know, because they're into fucking Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker, right?
Yeah. And
it wasn't all blues. You know, blues is a big part, especially England learning rock and roll, but especially Ginger bringing in that jazzy, swingy thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Jimmy called Mitchell his Elvin Jones. Does that sound on your side?
Yeah, sorry. Hold on 1 second, Mike. We'll be right back.
auf sie, halt die Kontrolle über dich und die Gedanken, die du hast. Eine Antwort, egal auf welche. deiner Rolle, deiner Rolle, deiner Rolle, deiner Rolle. Du hast es nicht gemerkt, doch sie hat die Kontrolle, die Kontrolle, die Kontrolle, die Kontrolle über dich, über dich und die Gedanken, die du hast, zumindest fast.
First, I'd like to welcome you to WKCR.
Wow.
And, you know.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming up and everything. We were worried about you a few minutes ago.
Why worry?
You know.
I had some technical difficulties.
Yeah, so. We were having some, too. I understand you're opening at Slugs tomorrow.
It isn't Slugs. It's Folk City.
Oh, Folk City.
On West 3rd Street.
Right.
So, we do work Slugs
quite often, a lot.
We will be going in there very soon, but this particular time it's Folk City.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the first time you've worked there?
Yeah, well, it's the first time I've worked there, and I understand that it's the first time that a jazz group has worked there. So
right.
It'll be sort of a first, or, you know, an initiation or something like that. But at least it'll be nice.
Yeah,
we're looking forward to it.
You don't think it's going to be any different than working the Vanguard or something?
Well,
it's just another gig, huh?
Well, I don't know. What it is, to me, every time we play, I try to do as well as possible, the best that we possibly can. So I'm not all that casual about where I'm working or anything. I think every place is important.
Right.
So we'll do.
Well, you've been all
the
over.
Very best that we can.
Yeah, you've been all over the world. I mean, played in every. All the free world, as they call it. Have you been to, like, China or anywhere, or Russia?
No, we haven't.
They have festivals there once in a while.
Well, they do that. And my brother's band is there now.
Oh, where?
In Russia.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, 5-week tour there. And then they're supposed to be in Moscow at the time when President Nixon is going to be there. You know? So it really means quite a lot. I think it's very nice. It's a good thing. It's a very important thing for Americans and for the music in general.
Mm-hmm. Somebody called up and heard you were going to be on the air, and they asked, you know, since you're going to be at this club, they immediately thought about the fact that you'd never made a live recording anywhere.
Well, not with this group. I haven't. We've been thinking about it. We've been kicking that idea around for a while, and it's just a there's a lot of things that are to consider when you think about doing a live recording in a club. You know, to check out the acoustics and all this and. Find out whether or not it's all right to do it there, because a lot of club owners and at least just don't like for that to happen because they think it interferes with their business.
Right.
So there's a lot of things to consider, but I would like to do a live recording somewhere, sometime, and I think we'll do one in the near future. But as to where we'll do it, I really don't know.
Yeah. Well, who's playing in the group that you have now? What's the personnel?
There's Gene Perla on bass.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's a great bass player. He's not only that, he's a great person. He's a gentleman. And he's very knowledgeable about music. And he's a enthusiastic student of music. And I can't think of anyone I'd rather have playing bass with me.
Right.
And there's David Liebman, who I think is a genius, really. He plays tenor saxophone, soprano, and flute. And he's a very prolific composer.
He's on your new album, right?
Yeah, he's on this. He's on the last one, too. Genesis, when he first started to play with the off and on, you know. Yeah. He's a very fine musician. And there's Steve Grossman, who previously his experience was with Miles Davis and some other groups. He's like the baby of the group, you know. And he's he takes up where John Coltrane left off. Yeah, like that. I think you just have to hear him do to really appreciate the mm-hmm. the tremendous talent that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And as Don Elias added with on conga drums, who was another alumnus of Miles Davis's group,
mm-hmm.
He's just a percussionist, and he plays conga in a in a context that isn't it isn't Latin, it isn't Afro, it isn't, but he plays real music with his conga drums. He's a real conscientious musician, and it fits what he does fits the group feeling so well. He's very he's another very fine person, and a real, I'm just happy as I can be to have him with us.
Right. So that's the whole group. Yeah. Let's see. The last time I saw you at Slugs, I think the group, was it the same group you had? Was it different?
I think it was the same group.
It was the
last time you were in there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so that group was really fine,
That's it. Yeah.
That was when they had the birthday party for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was on Friday.
It was really, really together.
Yeah, it was nice.
The group was really smoking that night, mm-hmm. man. I would have been surprised if it had broken up,
This is we're just really getting together,
right.
The breaking up is something that we don't even think about,
right.
This is something that we're gonna stay together and for as long as we live, as long as it lasts, as long as there's breath in our bodies.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I think I've heard that before. I've heard that before, but groups come and go. I mean,
sure,
people come and go, but in and out of groups
sure,
so fast.
Sure.
What happens? Musical tastes begin to differ. You start going in different directions.
Well, when that happens, I suppose we'll break up then. But otherwise, I can't foresee any disintegration of this group
mm-hmm.
in the near future.
Yeah. Really together. But one other thing I'd like to ask you, about playing in clubs and recording. When you play, you play a lot of solos. Like I've seen you take, very long solos. Would that be a factor in preventing you from recording a live album because of the limited amount of time that?
I would imagine that if and when we do a live album, and I'm hoping it'll be within the foreseeable future,
mm-hmm.
What I do on it, I don't think that won't be a governing factor as to the content of the album at
mm-hmm.
all.
Mm-hmm.
If I play a solo, I'll play a solo, and if I, if I don't, then I won't, But the length of it won't have anything to do with what it really is all about. It'll be a live album. It'll be a live album of what the group is doing, and it will hopefully give an honest and forthright projection of the abilities of the musicians involved.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're listening to WKCR FM 89.9 in New York. My name is Vernon Gibbs, and the program is called Jazz Alternatives. And right now we're speaking with Elvin Jones, who opens tomorrow at Folk City with his brilliant group that's been together for how long?
Wow.
A year.
Well, we keep adding people to the group.
Uh-huh.
Don Elias happens to be the last person to join the group, and he's been there for the last 2 months.
20 years of doing this show, and I'm still fucking blowing clamps. Pilot here. People,
did we lose everything, or just
no, no, left? Just this thing here. I'm telling people the names of the songs.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt your delivery to this stupid fucking show. Delivery. Okay, Swarm of Flies with Wendigo, which I believe is some kind of spirit from maybe Canadian, so somewhere north, and maybe Native people, right? Wendigo. Sophie Du Palais, Boys Tears out of Netherlands, Al Margolis, Chester, New York, Oboes for Jim, The Hellbeens, Brighton, England, brand new Twiddler on the Roof, Bud Buckle Jr., Sam Lockward, both from Iowa, one Dubuque, one Iowa City, In the Wind, I Hear Music, Air, Bomas Prendon, Brain 10, DC Area Parallel System, System 20, Ramby 10, this is the Eric Hardiman, upstate New York, Melanie Dubschlane, Andreas Brandall, Grant Capes, and La Puerta de Sol, and Vuce, right, Sunset, Flood. And finally, WKCR 97.1 interviewed Elvin Jones, a big hero. And Pettibone took me to see him a lot of times. Perk got me a poster signed. And, yeah, again, I apologize. And shit, we're at the end of the first hour. Was that Chow? What we'll talk about next. People, it's July 10, 2021, this Watt Peter Show special guest, Ken Warble. Did I get that right?
Nowhere near.
Okay. I'm an asshole. Sorry. Woo. July 10, 2021. It's the second hour of Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you. I'm running right out of time. Everything's just fine. I can't.
Watch for Pedro show start off the second hour with all these things destroy you. Eternal black. You know, do you still get the three projects going?
I do, yeah.
Okay, so I'm people, still, you know, Swarm of Flies, Eternal Black, and End of Hope. We'll be playing End of Hope in the third hour because I thought, you know, appropriate for the project. Sure. End of the show, End of Hope. Here, like, we're in the middle, so we're still hopeful, and it's Eternal Black. And Ben Salter from Tasmania, Lean Into It, McLaren from Lucas Abel, I Changed My Mind from the Plaster Men, and Eternal Black, Three Fates. So, who, all these guys, have been trading files, or have you been doing prac with these guys? What's up, Ken?
You know, I kind of had to work in isolation. That's why I started the Swarm of Flies thing. But then with the other bands, it really became sending files back and forth in order to keep working on new music.
Okay.
So I took the opportunity to get back up to speed on, like, recording at home because I didn't want to sit on my hands. So, you know, even though I'm still going down the rehearsal space, you know, while the pandemic's going on, and I'm going in by myself and just working on stuff and coming up with songs and coming up with ideas. But then I would come home, record them, even get them on a click track so the drummers could kind of knew what tempo I was thinking about, and everybody could kind of play along. And in certain cases, like on the End of Hope side, the other guys could record and send stuff back. And that's also how I got moving on the Swarm of Flies stuff, because then I'm like, well, why don't I just expand the circle, right?
Right. It's all vocabulary, right? You don't forget. You keep learning, keep building.
Yeah. The other great thing about the Swarm of Flies thing was, hey, let's learn some different things from other people. So, you know, I consider myself at best a growler. I'm not much of a singer, but there's a lot of people I admire, great singers like Amy Pickering, who sang on Wendigo and is from Fire Party, who's the most phenomenal singer. And I'm like, yeah, I want to learn how Amy is going to layer this, you know, or Earl Walker Lundy from the band Shadowwitch, who sang on another track, like, yeah, how's Earl going to go about it? Because I'm going to learn from them from doing it. Like, I'm the eternal student. I always want to learn from somebody who's better at it than me, you know?
Sure. Yeah, only a really insecure person puts, like, I don't know, I want to look good, so I'll get people who are maybe just starting out around me.
Yeah, that's stupid.
That's, yeah.
Why would you do that? Like, you want to be, like...
Well, I said the strategy is, like, you look big, right?
Yeah.
But it's really insecure, right?
No, like, you want to be, like, in a perfect world, you want to be Henry Rollins. You want to be the technically least talented guy in the band. Yeah. And surround yourself with the best musicians that then are going to make you look great. Right?
Yeah, Hank's got a spiel about it. You're right. That's a great thing he has about that.
Yeah.
And takes it to heart, not just a slogan.
And again, so like End of Hope, like, you know, all the guys that play with End of Hope are like phenomenal musicians. You know, they're you know, Davies, you know, this phenomenal singer and everything. And so when you work with people that are better than you, they elevate the songs. They lift it up. And you know this, you've worked with
somebody. I know, well, especially being a bass player. You look good making them look good.
Well, but like...
No, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I think those are some of the most excellent politics you can have in the band.
Yeah, but like, how much difference does a stellar bass player make in a band? You know, how much does that...
I'm a little bit biased there, Ken. Maybe I'm the wrong guy to ask.
I'm gonna say you tend to lift the bands you're playing. Yeah, I think you're.
I would hope so. Instead of dragging them down.
I'm sure you're self-deprecating. I'm sure you kicked yourself on a couple nights where you're like, I didn't play as well.
Or you write parts that have too much and you have to start taking out. You learn how to play the holes. It's trippy about that. I want to play this some of this live stuff from Jersey City. WMFU.
Awesome.
You called it dead. Tell us about when this recorded Dead, WFMU. Scott,
well,
Mr. Scott.
Yeah, so when we recorded at WFMU, which, like, what a massive honor. You know, I'm still amazed we got in the door. Because also Eternal Black, everybody's going to hear the music of Eternal Black. That's not what you think of when you think of WFMU.
They play all kinds of stuff, don't they?
They do. Yeah. They do, but I mean,
I think it depends on the DJ, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we're lucky enough that the guy who got us on, Sean, who has the show What Was Music, it plays a band called River Cult and is a fan of what we do, and so he got us in there. But what was great was we got to record with a guy named Scott Consum. And New York City art people might remember Scott, because Scott used to refer to himself and maybe a couple of partners as Chop Shop. And they used to do recordings of, like, they would go record a building shifting. and then release it in speckle, you know, like, and the packaging would be, like, limited to 5 in, like, lead-cased containers. And if you look up on Discogs, if you go on Discogs and look for Chop Shop or Scott Consulman, you'll find them, and you'll find people have them. And the odd thing is the guy who produces all the Eternal Black End of Hope albums, mostly works on Swimmer Flies, my friend Joe Kelly.
When I told him
we're working with this guy, Scott Consulman, he's like, I've got some of those. He's like, I've got some of the limited
kits. Inside info.
Yeah. But amazing guy and great ear, and it was fantastic to work with him.
You know, going back to you, like, using a click track and then giving him to Drummy, and then Drummy puts his stuff on.
Mm-hmm.
Do you? Because I've done that, right? But then I go back and I redo my bass to that new drums.
Oh yeah, yeah, you have.
Okay,
to.
Okay.
Gonna be awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you can make any drummer play to a click track, but they're going to play to their heartbeat, right?
Of course, right. Yeah, yes, sir.
It's going to go to their own thing. And also, they may play a little behind, and you want to sometimes, you want, like, the hits to match. You want, you know, you want to get
I found you want bass because the drum hits are very short, right? So you want them a little ahead. I put the bass a cut hair behind. And then you also fill out because you're more legato. You're more thick where his thing's real staccato and short.
Yeah,
but if you're at the same time, you get cancellation. And and I got this from the brothers in the R&B bands did this. Not too far behind. There's a skill to it. There's technique. Actually, Taff Falco turned me on to it. A Memphis thing. He learned it from Charlie Feathers, I think.
Whoa.
Well, it is, like we were saying, right? You want to get in an interesting classroom. You don't want to fucking, you know, dominate some, what, romper room? I'm the big man here, like nobody's learning from anybody, right? It's just all posture in front. Okay,
you want all the killers in your band, right?
Yeah. Look what Miles Davis did. He knew he wasn't going to be Diz, right? But he's going to make sure he's got the best fucking band.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Paul Chambers and John Coltrane, Crimin. You know,
Cannibal Adderley was no slouch.
No, not at all. In fact, really incredible, right? The Alto thing, which actually John Coltrane started on, but you see how similar, just like we were talking about the Priest with the two guitar guys, right? I don't really know who was the boss there. They had kind of a, right? They were kind of co-conspirators.
And two very different players.
It was different than, but it wasn't like Tom and John Fogerty, you know. Nothing against Keep On Choosing.
No,
all the way. Oh man.
and depending upon your, like, you know, depending on your perspective, like some folks in terms of Priests, like KK Downing, like I love KK Downing solos because they're looser and like more from like the Hendrix side of things, whereas Glenn Tipton solos are more on the nose. They're more, they sound more constructed. Whereas KK Downing solos were always like
from the hip.
Yeah. They were always out there. There's that song, Sinner, they have, and there's a live version of it where he just got the Echoplex just cranked. He's going off, but it's fabulous.
I remember one of them played Ben Over. More bent over than the other dude.
Yeah, that was probably him. Like leaning all the way back and,
And they had like a monster man on bass. I can't remember his name, but he's a lot of beard.
Yeah, well, yeah, and never leaves his X. He's like Cliff Williams from AC/DC, like always stands on the X.
That's right. That, on the mark. On the mark.
Yeah, yeah. Like I always wondered, like, how did they not have like occupational pain in like the lower back? And they never moved. They like never even stamped a foot. Nothing. They just stood there.
Oh, beautiful, Ken. We're at the end of the second hour, July 10, 2021. Dish Watt Peters, our special guest, Ken Wohlrab.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hold 10 for 3. July 10, 2021. It's third hour. Watch for Pete Rose Show.
To do it all, what it's 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 to do soldiers outside. Always been looking for a place to hide. Armed to the teeth. What if this only was a dream?
Show $30. The deal. from End of Hope. Says, number two, live at Savoy Tivoli in San Francisco, February 12, 1981. Oons, this is the late, great Zev side project, Edward Spiel. Blake Edwards provided me, he took care of him in his last time, you know, fight the fucking cancer shit. He's beautiful inspiration, people. He's greatest punk rocker. He used only swinging pieces of metal as almost killed by the shit in his performances. I took your name from Holland with Half Speed and End of Hope. What was I thinking? And like, you didn't forget the question mark. Yeah, sometimes they leave you in doubt, right? Because in English, it's the way we, yeah. What was I thinking?
What was I thinking?
Yeah, you could mean like. Yeah, but it could be a declarative, right? What is the thing I was thinking about, right? It all depends on that little lift at the end of the, right? That means question. So, yeah, who does. That singer, man, you're a big fan of his voice. I think he's great pipes, too. But what about the words? Does he write words, too?
He writes all the words. Yeah, okay. And you probably remember Davey from Kraut.
Absolutely. I remember the guitar man. Wasn't he the main dude?
Yeah, so he wrote all of the music. I don't know if Davey did the lyrics or Doug Holland. Doug Holland was his name. Did the lyrics too back in Kraut, but now in End of Hope, Davey writes all the lyrics. He sings everything. You know, End of Hope is a four-man partnership. We attack and write everything together.
Right. But does he like lead the charge? Because you know how many bands words come last. Right? I think fucking Geezer wrote them for Sabbath.
Yeah. Ozzy didn't write a lot of lyrics.
Yeah, Geezer. Right. And they were like way after the jams, right? Geezer would come up the words.
Yeah. Because there's
well, is that the process with you guys?
No, what's really fascinating, and one of the joys of like working with Davey is if we're in the room and I've brought in like, I usually bring in riffs in terms of like, here's a song. Like I'll have something put together as a whole song, a collection of riffs and stuff. And then we start hacking at it. You know, we start like pulling, like I'll come in with 3 minutes and we get it down to a minute 50. But as we're doing that, Davey has like an endless bank of lyrics.
Oh, and he's got like a book, a notebook or something?
He's got it on his phone. Okay. And so as we keep, you know, we'll play through riff and a drum will be like, hey, what if we sped that up a little bit? Or hey, let's do that four times instead of two times. And as we're doing that, he's over there like flipping around on his phone. And all of a sudden he'll look and go, I got something. And then we'll play it through and he's already got lyrics. He's already going through it. So as we hash it out musically, he's already pulling lyrics out and starting to work them.
And as he's bringing in the words, then you guys are still in the process. So it's his word bringing in is actually aiding and abetting in the music composing.
Am I right? So, yeah. Okay. And what's great is our bass player works very closely with Davey in terms of, okay, what are the backup vocals going to be? How are you, the bass player singing and Davey singing? How are we going to sing together? And they both add so much where, you know, those choruses and the shouting and all of that adds a whole nother layer.
You know who was really good at that? Mike Anthony.
Oh, yeah.
I know I got a little biased for the bass, but I think his bass was very supportive too, but when he did that, Buck Owens did the same thing, right? You bring in the high voice on that chorus, it pops!
Yeah.
Fucking, he was great with that shit.
Look at Joe Strummer and Mick Jones.
He did it too. Voice. Yeah, Mick Jones would do that too.
And again, going back to what we were talking about before, that's something I don't think I would have thought about or figured out on my own had I not stepped in the room with Davey and Davis, our bass player, because in my head, I'm just growling out the lyrics. I'm not smart enough with the lyrics to do that, whereas those guys are so creative with how they think about how those lyrics
now,
go.
You know, I won't put growl in the same, you know, bucket as Cookie Monster.
No. I can't do that and not start laughing.
There are cats that do. Stooges did a whole, I think the whole concert, we were the only ones without Cookie Monster vocal.
It was like
50
yeah.
bands.
Some okay. of the European shows, I'm sure.
That's what it was. It was in the south of France. It was called, actually, maybe metal was in the name or something. I can't remember, but here, I want to play Iron Fist.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you gave this to me.
Thank you.
Pino show, last music, Iron Fist with From End Hope, and then live stream from Memphis Concert Fest, this is from 27 June, just a couple weeks ago, Victoria Shannon, and then the demo for Guilt Trip. So I think this is when End of Hope was first recorded, because I also found a studio version of Guilt Trip.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? We wrote in 2 weeks, I think we had enough songs for a full album when we first got together. And that demo was like, hey, let's just get some stuff recorded so we could start sending it out to people who play shows and other stuff. So, cause they're always like, well, what do you sound like? And that's why we did the demo.
And you know, I like that better because if you start using genre names, fuck. The worst is mentioning other bands. I have guys come on the show and do that. It's like, come on.
Well, you know what? We did that, and we still kind of do it because what we find is, you've heard it, we don't sound like a what most people think of as a typical punk band. And in my head, the way I explained it to Davey is like, well, what are you thinking? And I'm like, kind of thinking like Black Flag meets Motorhead.
They asked them to open, but they said, well, you got to rent the lights for
$27,000.
Yeah, true story. Look, Eternal Black and Swarm of Flies, are they kind of closer than End of Hope? End of Hope sounds like you're more in a collab.
Well, Swarm of Flies is a collab because there I'm not setting a song. I'm just like starting with a layer and then having everybody else contribute.
Okay, so, you're the fire starter. Okay, okay.
Yeah. So in terms of creating the music, End of Hope and Swarm of Flies are much closer, whereas Eternal Black is, it's just, you know, it's not because I'm headstrong or it's just for whatever reason, I always would come in with like, hey, here's a whole song.
Yeah, it's your turn to be shot caller. That's okay. You put yourself in situations where you're taking turns and maybe sometimes you are the shot caller. You know, sometimes, you know, you got to do that to learn how to do it. And your guys, you know, when it's their turn, you got to learn how to take direct. I think it's good for everybody to take. Nobody gets like all frozen in one kind of, I don't know, position or station or strata or hierarchy or, you know, because we're talking about something like artistic expression. And then on the other hand, you start all this kind of military organization. No.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No, but you do get into processes and things and the way people work. I understand that.
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, sometimes you just have bands where it's like, and again, with End of Hope, I didn't walk into that going, okay, I want to have it where I'm not writing everything. I approached it the same way, but all of a sudden I had three headstrong dudes going, nah, it should be this. And so it was like, oh, this is different. Okay, I'm going to pivot and see how this goes. You know, you react.
You reacted with tolerance, which is not usually the knee-jerk thing, especially these days.
Well, yeah, you know, you deal with certain dudes, and you're like, well, I could plate them on this, but I'm not going to win. So let's see.
No, well, I think also you got the long game, right? You say, man, this proj might develop into something interesting, so give it a shot. Give it a chance.
Well, and also the other thing, too, is when you – sometimes you step in a situation and the ideas that are getting thrown back at you are so interesting, you're like, I'm not going to fight it. Let's see where this goes. Like,
I still think that needs a little pull back on the reins of the ego and carry a respect you for that.
But it's made me a better songwriter. You know, because also now when I write for that band, I'm also thinking about, well, what's Dave the drummer going to do? You know, and how do I want Davey to maybe sing this? And you know, one of the funniest things, and then the hope is I'll put a song together, and in my head I'm thinking, all right, the verse is here and the chorus is here, and 9 times out of 10, Davey has it the complete opposite way.
Verses. Look, how close is End of Hope with their album?
I think we're ready to record in September. Like we've got 11 more songs already written. We have a song out on, there's a A7 Back to New York Hardcore Roots compilation. We have a song called Nothing to See Here that
A7 the venue?
Yes. So
Bad Brains used to be like the boys.
So A7's been back. A guy named Drew Stone has been doing a phenomenal job of sort of reviving A7. We played a couple of the Back to New York Hardcore Roots shows. The new compilation Drew and his guys put together is really phenomenal. We're on there with like 15 other.
Yeah, but when this album comes out, okay, this End of Hope, come back on the show. And,
absolutely.
And I want to play all the tunes, and I want you walking us through each one, because it's. I'm really interested in the way you made them, as well as wanting to hear it.
Thanks, man.
Brother Ken, thanks so much for being on the show. Can't wait to have you back.
An honor once again. Thanks, Mike.
Big love. People, July 10th, 2021, this is why Peter Shakir, your powder dry.